of Bhakti, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was publishing literature with great enthusiasm, including his
pleasure that we have the fortune of introducing you to a very special guest who is with us today. His Grace Sri Drutakarma Prabhu, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, out of his infinite compassion, desired to change the hearts of the unfortunate souls who in this age of Kali Yuga were trying to find happiness through the process of discovering newer and newer ways of material enjoyment. And Srila Prabhupada, being a very creative preacher of the message of the Holy Name, could see how very much people were influenced by Western conceptions. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada was here in Bombay and other parts of India, he witnessed that the youth of India, as well as all generations, were so much being influenced by the Western scientific conceptions of reality. And he was thinking that if people of the West were to come back to India and preach to the Indians, then they would take it seriously. Because the British had literally brainwashed the people of India to think that anything from India is low class and anything from West, especially London, is high class. And later, as time went on in Kali Yuga, the emphasis shifted from London to the United States of America. So Srila Prabhupada went to America and he saw the condition of people. So much material prosperity, so much technology, so many high scientific facilities being used by even the common man. Srila Prabhupada said that the average people of India, they cannot even conceive or imagine the way the people of the American countries are living, their standards of living. Srila Prabhupada understood that in order to truly reach the hearts of people in this world, we have to convince them of the validity of the truths revealed in the Vedic scriptures. And how more and more the atheistic class of scientists were taking big, big roles in society. In the West, and perhaps here also, even in the grammar schools, the conceptions of what is reality, what is creation, is taught to young children according to speculative, modern, so-called modern scientific ideas. And by the time a young child grows up in this spiritual slaughterhouse, there's practically no room for faith in God, real faith in God. You cannot have faith in God without having faith in His Word. And His Word is revealed in the scriptures. And here in India, it is amazing how Western education has slaughtered the faith, real faith in people. There is sentimental superstitions that are somehow or other continuing on due to past traditions. But when it comes right down to it of who you believe, people believe the materialistic scientists. Because they claim that they have evidence that can be verified through one's senses. And they have their theories of what is creation, in which there is no room, there is no possibility of having faith in a personal God. In fact, Srila Prabhupada was so strong to emphasize the difference of that the moon was farther than the sun. Every opportunity he would emphasize that. Why? Because he wanted to challenge our faith in material science. Do you have faith in the speculative theories of conditioned souls who are addicted to eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat-eating? People whose hearts are plagued with the filth of lust and anger and greed and pride and illusion and all sorts of other material conditionings? Or are you going to accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the greatest acharyas throughout history who lived pure lives, who were compassionate, who were actually transforming the world into a place of peace and love? Srila Prabhupada explained many times that people are dying everywhere. The scriptures and the acharyas teach us how to become free from death by understanding the eternality of the soul. And the greatest achievements of so-called modern science is building big, big bombs which do not solve the problems of death, but rather accelerate the problem of death. Rather than creating peace, is creating so much pollution. And when you do not believe with faith, based on philosophy and realization in the precepts of God, then there is no question of morality. There's no reason for morality. And look at what the so-called scientific discoveries of this world have done to human society. You can do anything you want, it doesn't matter. If you get away with it and it's pleasing to the senses, that is success in life. If you do not have faith in the scriptures and in faith in God, you do not understand that the laws of karma are there. For every action, there is an equal corresponding reaction. So Srila Prabhupada, very, very extraordinarily, in a unique and unprecedented way, came with the Vedic knowledge, which is the highest, most philosophical and scientific presentation of truth ever revealed to man. And he declared war against the atheistic speculative forms of science and the scientists who declare themselves to be the gurus and teachers for all humanity. And Srila Prabhupada wanted very much those disciples who were qualified and capable of performing this service to stand forward and challenge the fallacious, speculative, cheating conceptions of so-called modern education. Srila Prabhupada explained to the general people, we can explain as he had, basic philosophy and logic and convince them. But to the big, big scientists and those who were intimately influenced by such scientists, they will not accept our words unless we can explain it in their own language. And what is their language? To a common man like me, Hindi, Sanskrit, Marathi is much easier to understand, even when they speak in English. I was at the conference of the synthesis of religion and science in Calcutta, and when the devotees spoke, I could understand some things, because they had some Sanskrit. But when these scientists spoke, the only thing I understood was the prasad. It's good prasad. It was a very successful conference. It served a wonderful purpose. But as far as the content, they have so many egoistic ways of utilizing the most eloquent vocabulary to explain in very scientific terminology. And Srila Prabhupada wanted our devotees, specialized devotees, who were willing and able to perform this austerity, to actually speak in their language, according to their systems, and defeat them. And prove the supremacy of the Vedas. So today we have one of the very few of such exalted personalities who have taken this mission of Srila Prabhupada as his heart and soul. And perhaps one of the most successful Vaishnav preachers in scientific fields in the history of humanity. Dutakarma Prabhu has just written a wonderful book called Forbidden Archaeology, along with Sadaputa Prabhu, two very dear godbrothers. And this book has literally shaken the scientific world in the Western countries at its roots. They don't know what to do with this book. They're digging up bones, but they have dug up so many skeletons in the closets of the scientists, which they have no answers for. They are challenged with scientific evidence that the scientists have no answers for. And Dutakarma Prabhu has been traveling in the last couple years throughout the United States of America on major television networks. Recently on NBC TV, the number one television station in America and perhaps in the world. And it was a nationwide show that showed twice with the biggest movie actor in modern history, Charlton Heston, as the commentator. And he and Sadaputa Prabhu and some other of their colleagues were revealing the fallacy and the flaws of the so-called theories that are accepted as facts today in science. He's also traveled and toured on major television shows, radio networks, newspapers, magazines throughout America, establishing that Krishna knows the highest truths. And if we want to understand the truth, we must hear from God himself. Not from the tiny little brains of tiny little temporary so-called scholars. Srila Prabhupada challenged, if you know so much, save yourself from death. They cannot. Krishna created Einstein's brain, but Einstein could not create another brain before he died. Unless we have this type of faith in Krishna, there is no question of bhakti. There is no question of peace, morality, or love. So let us all very, very enthusiastically and loudly welcome Dutakarma Prabhu to our Radha Gopinath Temple.
So I'm very grateful for this opportunity to come and visit you at Chaupati ISKCON Temple. I feel sort of like Narada Muni when he was in Dwarka visiting all the different palaces of Krishna and looking with amazement at the activities. So I'm looking with amazement at the activities of this community of devotees, so many preaching programs going on at colleges and universities, so many programs going on in all the districts of the city. Such a nice congregation developing in a very systematic way. I'm very amazed to see all of these activities. And I'm very grateful for the invitation that Radhanath Swami gave me last year in Mayapur to come visit. Because my habit is I don't like to go places just for touring and seeing. I like to go places when there is some service for me to do, because if I don't have any service, then Maya is always there to try to grab me. So Radhanath Swami invited me to come here and render some service to Srila Prabhupada by doing some preaching. So his assistants have been very busily keeping me engaged in preaching, and I've had hardly 1 second to be bothered by Maya, so I'm very grateful for these opportunities. We did get one of our preaching activities, an engagement at one of the at Bombay University, was spoiled by some unfortunate political development, but other than that, you know, I was kept engaged the entire time, and I'm most grateful. So as far as speaking in the language of the scientist is concerned, there once a college student wrote to Srila Prabhupada and said, I've got all this scientific training and I want to know if I can use it in Krishna's service. You know, can I use it somehow to change the ideas of these materialistic scientists? And Srila Prabhupada said yes, and he quoted one Bengali folk saying, which amounts to, I will smash your teeth with your own pestle. So, we can use their language to defeat their ideas. Lord Chaitanya also did this. Basically, we like to speak with people who accept the Vedic scriptures. Then we can quote Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamikam Sharanam Vraja, and they will accept. But there are people today and in the time of Lord Chaitanya who don't accept Shastra, who don't accept scripture. So when Lord Chaitanya was touring South India, he met with a Buddhist who don't accept the Vedas. So he was arguing with them on the basis of logic and reason and different kinds of evidence. So sometimes we have to do the same thing. And as Radhanath Swami was mentioning, along with Sadabhuta Prabhu, I wrote one book, Forbidden Archaeology, which is a big book, maybe 900 pages long. If you can't convince somebody to read it, you can throw it at them. It's a big book, heavy book. It's not exactly bedside reading for devotees. I was once in Washington, D.C. temple, and one devotee approached me and he said, what Krishna conscious benefit is there for a devotee to read this book? I said, none. You should be reading Krishna book. Because it's full of facts and figures and arguments and things like that. If someone's very interested in this kind of preaching and they want to engage in it themselves, then they can study the book with profit and learn some arguments and how to present things. For such devotees, the book is useful. But for others who may not be able to read it so well, they should at least know that it exists. I'm very happy to tell them about this book so that they know that it exists, because Srila Prabhupada, of course, he was concerned about all of the ideas of these modern atheistic scientists. If you look at his conversations, his letters, his books, he was constantly speaking about these things. He didn't like this idea that they say the universe just came from a big bang. He said, how can that be? When you have an explosion, everything falls apart. You know, it's not it's not a very logical idea to think that we get this universe with so much order and complexity simply by some explosion. And he didn't like this idea that life just comes from chemicals, that the chemicals just combine together. He says, how is that? How can that happen? He challenged them. If you say that that occurred, well, the chemicals are there. Put them together. Make anything. Make a chicken. Make a blade of grass. Make something. But nobody has ever seen that happen. Neither can they do it in the laboratory. So they're just bluffing. And the people believe them because they're speaking high words and they may have Nobel Prize and this and that. But if we keep the simple fact in mind, sometimes you see in different parts of the world, they always have the story of the simple peasant who outwits the very famous philosopher or something. So we should be like that. Just understand one very simple thing, that what they're talking about, no one has seen, no one has done. it's a very simple point. How do they know how the universe came about? Were they there? No. Has anyone ever seen life come from chemicals? No. Has any scientist ever done it in the laboratory? No. Then, he also, Srila Prabhupada also didn't like this idea that one species turns into another. Nobody has ever seen that. If the dogs are always coming out dogs. The cats always cats. You don't see the cat having a dog. You never see it. The horse is always giving the horse, human being always a human being. So no one has ever seen these one species transform into another. Neither have they ever been able to do it in their laboratories. And another idea that he didn't like very much is this idea there is no soul. This idea that, life is just chemicals in the brain. So Srila Prabhupada would challenge them. Oh, there's a dead body, then just put the proper chemical in and make it live again. So these are very, very good arguments. And if we understand them, we'll never be fooled. We may not be able to always convince people, but at least ourselves, we won't be fooled. Now, on this specific idea that human beings have come from the apes, Srila Prabhupada once said, this idea that the humans have come from the apes, it has killed civilization. And for the past 150 years, the scientists have been telling the people, yes, you're just apes that have become human beings. You're just animals. So now, should we be surprised that people are acting like animals if they've been told that for 150 years by these scientists? And we see the world as becoming a very hellish place. So many random acts of terrorism, crime, so many things are going on that are not very pleasant for sensitive souls like the Vaishnavas. So Srila Prabhupada specifically wanted this idea that the human beings have come from the apes challenged. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, text 10, we see Lord Krishna saying, in the very beginning of creation, I sent forth generations of men and demigods. So according to Krishna, in the beginning of creation, the human beings are there. So when is the beginning of creation? In Vedic philosophy, we know there is the Kalpa, the day of Brahma. So the beginning of creation is the beginning of the Kalpa, or the beginning of the day of Brahma. So when was that? That was, if you calculate it, you can calculate it. It was about 2 billion years ago. So Krishna is saying, well, at the very beginning, the human beings were there. And the Darwinists, you know, the materialistic scientists are saying, no, there was no human being then. There was no God either. They say that simply by chance, by evolution, maybe 100,000 years ago, the human beings have come into existence. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted this particular idea challenged. So, we wrote our book, Forbidden Archaeology, to point out the mistakes the scientists have made in their claims that the human beings have evolved from the apes fairly recently. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted this challenge to be made in two areas. He wanted us to go to the scientists themselves and tell them their idea is wrong. And he also wanted us to go to the people in general and tell them, you have been cheated by these scientists. So, the challenge has been going on both fronts. For the scientists, we made this big book, Forbidden Archaeology, 900 pages long, and then for the ordinary people, we made a shorter version of the same book called Hidden History of the Human Race. So the big book, it has attracted much attention in the scientific world. They are very angry about this book because they've never seen anyone challenge them like this before. But they're talking about it in all of their scientific journals, in the fields of archaeology and anthropology and history of science. They're writing big articles about this book. And even though some of them, they disagree with it. They say, we disagree with the conclusion. They say, we've never seen anything like this before. Anything so well done and so well written and so scholarly. You know, they all admit that. And some of them are starting to change their minds a little bit. Some of them, they wrote, after reading this book, we shouldn't say anymore that evolution is a fact. They said we should just think it. We should just say it is a very, very good theory. So the next step will be they'll say it's a very bad theory, and maybe we should find a new one. So, and then I've also been able to speak at scientific conferences about this book. Actually, in December 1994, I came to New Delhi to speak at the World Archaeological Congress, which was held in New Delhi. Each year it's held in a different country. So that year it was held in New Delhi, sort of like a Kumbh Mela for archaeologists. They come from all over the world. So I got to speak, presented a paper there. And some of the Indian scientists who were present, they were coming up to me, practically falling at my feet, saying they had never seen anyone stand up for the Vedas and Puranas like this before. And so they were encouraging me to go further. So on the scientific front, things are going on. And then also, on the popular front, things are going on. A couple of years ago, I decided I was going to go on the radio and television programs in the United States and, you know, in the United States, it's very difficult. I was wondering, what are they going to say to me when I go on their television program and say, yes, I'm a member of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, science studies branch of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and I'm telling you that you've been cheated for the past 100 years by your very respectable scientist. I felt, it was almost like, once I heard Srila Prabhupada say, this was in Atlanta in 1975, he was talking about what he felt like when he was on the boat getting ready to step off into America. He was thinking, he says, I'm going to go, and I'm going to tell these Americans, yes, please give up your gambling, please give up your illicit sex, please give up your intoxication, please give up your meat eating. And he was thinking, the Americans are going to tell me, please, Swami, get back on the boat and go back to India. But of course they didn't. They didn't. Some of them were very willing to hear his message, and of course that was the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world. So similarly, I was thinking, what are they going to say when I say I'm a member of the Krishna consciousness movement and I'm telling you that you didn't evolve from the apes and you've been cheated by these scientists? I thought they would tell me, you go home. Actually, I felt like I was jumping out of an airplane with no parachute. Because especially in America, you know, I was wondering, what are they going to tell? What questions are they going to ask me? Are they going to say, oh, yes, you're a member of this brainwashing cult. How can we listen to anything you have to say? Because in America, there's perhaps not as much respect for the tradition that Krishna consciousness represents as here in India. It's a little something new there, and people aren't as familiar with it. But to my surprise, I found there was no such question. Without exception, all of these talk show hosts on the radio and television, they were all, without exception, very respectful. And as a matter of fact, they were saying, oh, I always suspected we were being cheated by these scientists, and now we know it's true. Because in America, they've come to understand, oh yes, we've been cheated by the politicians, we've been cheated by this group and that group, and now we know we've been cheated by these scientists as well. And so, especially on the radio programs in the United States, they have people calling in. You speak and the announcer speaks, and then people from outside, they call in on the telephone and then you answer their questions. And 99 out of 100 questions, it was very favorable, saying, yes, I always knew we were being cheated by these scientists. Now I know it. Of course, one of the reasons I went on these radio and television programs was to increase the sales of the book, because the book is being sold only through bookstores, commercial bookstores. So the method is, you put the book in the bookstore, then you have to tell people about it on the radio and television, then they go and buy it. So in this way, tens of thousands of copies of the book are being sold in the United States. And we're also getting contracts from commercial publishing firms in many countries. In Germany, the book has been translated into German and it's selling tens of thousands of copies. And we've signed recently a contract with a publisher in Italy, another one in Mexico, who will distribute the book all over Latin America. And just recently, we've signed a contract with one of the biggest publishers in Japan. And, of course, I'm hoping with the help of the devotees here that we can find a publisher in India for the book, so it can become available to people in India at a reasonable cost. So this is going on, and Radhanath Swami was mentioning this television program on NBC. This was actually significant. It was the first time in history that a big American television network made a program against Darwin. So the scientists, the materialistic scientists, they were outraged. They didn't know what to do. It was like a sneak attack on them. They weren't expecting it. So especially when they heard that this television program was, it was so popular that the NBC network said, we have to show it again. You know, so everybody who didn't see it the first time can see it because everybody was talking about it. And they, so then the materialistic scientists, they were so angry. They tried to make a campaign to stop the NBC television network from showing this program again. So this NBC television network, it's owned by another big American company called General Electric, GE. So they were writing letters to the chairman of NBC saying, do not let your television network, NBC, show this program again. But it's interesting, they didn't succeed. Actually, the NBC television network showed the program again, and they made advertisements to the people saying, see the program the scientists don't want you to see. And then we sold thousands more books the next time. Actually, in America, they have one organization that's called the National Center for Science Education. And the purpose of this organization is to make sure that the high schools in America teach Darwin and nothing else. So, actually, you know, in the United States, it is illegal to teach anything but Darwin in the public schools. If you try to say that God created the human beings, you'll be put in jail. And they call it, freedom of speech, something. You can speak about anything except God creating the human beings. But in any case, they have this organization, the National Center for Science Education. So after this television program was shown in the United States, the president of this organization said, I don't know what to do. From all over the country, the teachers are calling me and they're saying, please help us. Our students have seen this television program and they're asking questions that we can't answer. So please, so please help us. Anyway, I think it's very good the students, you know, can ask questions. Why shouldn't they? And that's what we want them to do. We want them to ask questions about all of these nonsense ideas that they've been taught. So, of course, all of this is in the very beginning stages. Just like we would like every home to be a temple, every restaurant to be a Govinda's restaurant. And so we would like that. Same way, we would like every school to be teaching philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and not this Darwin business. So we're a long way from that. But, you know, the journey of the 1,000 miles begins with one step. So we're taking that step. And Krishna is mercifully giving some reciprocation. And hopefully it will continue on and on and on. So thank you for this opportunity to make this report to your congregation. And I've also been very grateful for the opportunity to present this message to at different universities and colleges locally here. And hopefully if we can get an edition of this book printed in India, then, you know, we can make more efforts. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Anyone have any questions for Jhuta Karma Prabhu?
Yes. Okay, I didn't hear the last part of the question. So the question is, there's in forbidden archaeology, we present a lot of evidence that goes against Darwin's theory. So the question is there positive evidence for some alternative explanation of human origins? And the answer is yes. And that is the subject matter of my next book, which I'm calling Human Devolution. And the basic idea there is that these Darwinists say we evolve up from the apes by material process on this planet. And the Vedic idea is that we've devolved from some original spiritual position and come down to this position. And that's called, so they say evolution, and I'm saying devolution. And going back, that's revolution. Yes. Okay.
I understand there's a book written about how NASA cheated about landing on the moon. You have any comment on, or any news on that?
Well, yeah, Srila Prabhupada is not the only person who says that. There are other people who also say that they didn't go to the moon as they claimed. Srila Prabhupada said three things about this subject. Sometimes he said, well, maybe they went, but they didn't get into the real moon planet. Just like, you know, you can try to go to the United States and you may land at, say, JFK Airport in New York. And if you don't have the proper visa and papers, then the immigration officials will send you back, send you out. You may land in the airport, but you don't get in the country. So sometimes he said it was like that. Sometimes he said, well, maybe they went to some other place, not the moon, but some other place. But most often he said they didn't go anywhere. It was all a big hoax. So, of course, if there's some big hoax, some big conspiracy, then it's always very difficult to uncover. To get evidence of it. But such things do happen. For example, I'll give you some practical examples. For a long time in the United States, many people were saying that after World War II, the United States government used American citizens as subjects. They subjected them to radiation and did medical experiments with them, and many of them died of cancer and other radiation-related diseases. So for 50 years, the United States government denied this. They said, we never did this. We never deliberately subjected people to radiation. It never happened. It never happened. It never happened. Then just 2 years ago, President Clinton had one of his cabinet secretaries announced, yes, the United States government did subject people to radioactivity in medical experiments, and many of them did die from these experiments, and they released all the documents. So, it is a fact that a government can do things and they can keep it secret and the people involved will not talk about it. So these things do happen. So may have been the case with this so-called moon landing too. That could also have been a hoax. And we know governments can keep secrets, and they're very difficult to uncover. So I don't have any problem with Srila Prabhupada saying it was a hoax. If he said it, then it probably was. Now, but uncovering the evidence years before they finally admit it, just like these radiation experiments that the government did, the United States government did. Also, during Second World War, the Americans and the British, they were going to invade Europe from England. So they wanted to confuse the Germans where they were going to invade. So in England, they made a fake army camp, a huge army. They put up tents, they put up buildings, they had wooden tanks, thousands of them, looking just like an invasion army to invade at a certain place in France. And they set up a headquarters, and they had radio operators and telegraph operators making all messages as if it were a huge army. You know, send supplies here, do this, do that. And then they even made, they sent a submarine off the coast of Portugal, and they had a dead body, and they put a map with a fake invasion plan in it, and they threw the body off into the ocean, because they knew that Portugal was connected with Germany, and they knew that the Portuguese secret police would take the map and give it to the Germans. So in this way, they carried out a big hoax on the Germans, and the Germans actually thought they were going to invade some other place. So when they actually invaded, the Germans were not expecting them to invade in that place. But in any case, none of this was revealed until 50 years later, when the British War Office released the documents and said, yes, we carried out this subterfuge against the Germans. So governments can do this. They can carry out very elaborate hoaxes. Nobody will say a word about it for 50 years, and then they'll release the documents and say, yes, that we did it. So I think this moon hoax is the same thing. Someday we'll learn the truth. We know what the truth is. Srila Prabhupada has told us what the truth is, but to get them to admit it, what they've done, may take some time. Yes? Microphone's not working.
Living entities are subjected to life and death, so there's a cycle. And when you're reborn, there are 84 lakhs of different species. So how does the gradation take place, in the sense that, suppose an ant, how does the consciousness of an ant gets elevated to a human being? Or how does that, is it a scientific process, or is it by the mercy of the Lord?
Srila Prabhupada has explained that the animal species come up to the human form by a process of evolution from one body to another until they reach the human form again. It's also explained, Srila Prabhupada also explains, is that each time there is some training for the new body. That's part of Yamaraja's business, is to give us training, you know, to give the soul training for each new body that it's going to take. And just like we see there are so many schools out here, training for computers, you know, training for airplane pilot, you know, so many things. So Yamaraj also has his system of schools, you know, to train how to be a bird, how to be a plant, you know, how to do all these things. So it's a process of evolution. And then when we come to the human form, the animals, they advance automatically. The souls go through the bodies automatically. But it's only in the human form that we have the freedom and the freedom to determine what our path is going to be. Are we going to go back to Godhead or back down into the animal species? And that's why, you know, Vedanta Sutra says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that we've attained this human form of life, we should use it for the proper purpose. And that's why Srila Prabhupada was so concerned about these materialistic scientists. Because they were misleading people, and causing them to miss the chance to go back home, back to Godhead. Actually, Srila Prabhupada once says, we really don't care so much about these scientists. They're saying this or that or the other. The reason that we care is they're misleading the people in general. Because the people, everybody, we've all got this human form of life. And then if we're misled by these materialistic scientific ideas, their propaganda, then we miss the chance. We miss the chance to go back home, back to Godhead in this life.
Oftentimes in the course of our preaching, when we are preaching to young students in the colleges, we see that initially there is very little faith in the scriptures and word of God. And before we can establish that Shabda Praman is the best way of acquiring knowledge, you know, they may come across many statements given by Prabhupada which, you know, bewilders them sometimes. And oftentimes we see that they also give up chanting and they leave the process. For example, I'm not from a scientific field, so I would just like to ask you one question, that sometimes Prabhupada says in his books that the moon, according to the Vedic constellation theory, is farther than the sun. And oftentimes we have seen that when students hear this, then they are completely bewildered, because all these years they have been hearing from the scientists and in the books. So is there any scientific way of proving that, you know, what Prabhupada is saying is perfect?
This is elaborate subject matter. And see, sometimes you have to study to understand things. So sometimes we have to study to understand what, you know, the Vedas are saying about certain subject. So Sataputra Prabhu has written a very nice book called Vedic Cosmography and Astronomy, where all these questions are dealt with. He actually has, in one section of the book, there's common questions and answers, where that question and many other are answered. So usually when Srila Prabhupada was making that statement, he was talking about fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, this is technical. You're asking technical question. And so now I'm going to have to speak a little bit technically. You know, if we're going to talk about astronomy, then we may have to, you know, speak a little bit technically. But fifth canto is talking about the order of the planets, their height above Bhumandala. this height above the Bhumandala, they're given. The planets are given in a certain order. First, sun, then moon, then this, that, the other. Now, actually this corresponds to something in modern astronomy. Bhumandala corresponds to the plane of the ecliptic. And actually you'll find that plane of the ecliptic means the orbit of the sun as it goes around the Earth against the background of stars. And actually, if you look at it from the modern astronomical point of view, each other planet also has its orbit. And if you compare the orbits above the ecliptic, it's the same order that's given in fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, sun, moon, etc. So, anyways, that's a technical explanation. It takes about a half hour to really explain this to somebody. but some devotees have very carefully considered these questions, just for the reason that you've said. So we have to take advantage of their knowledge and their expertise. And in this particular case, it's written in this book by Sataputra Prabhu. Do you want to go on with more questions? Okay. As I said, if I had a half hour to spend on this question and a chalkboard, you know, we could give a little lecture on it. And
the scientists are very intelligent people, and how is it, and they are believing exclusively on facts, and why is it that they are not able to see the faults unless they are biased?
Yes, well, Krishna explains this both in the Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Namam dushkritano mudha prapadyante naradama maya pritigyana asuram bhava mashrita. So, Namam dushkritano mudha prapadyante. Krishna says there's certain people who will not surrender to him. And this can mean intellectual surrender as well, because intellectual surrender means accepting what Krishna says. And intellectual non-surrender means sticking to one's own speculative ideas. So Krishna describes these people in general as duṣkṛtana. So kṛtana means they actually have some qualification, like you say. They have some qualification, but unfortunately, instead of sukṛtana, it's duṣkṛtana. Instead of good qualification, it's bad qualification. And specifically, Krishna says two things. Maya aprahita jnana. Their knowledge is stolen away by maya, by illusion. And second thing, asuram bhavam ashrita. They have the mentality of asuras. So the asuric mentality is not to surrender to Krishna, to fight Krishna, to try to kill Krishna. So in past ages, some of these asuras, they try to kill Krishna with a club or weapon. These days, they're trying to kill Krishna with philosophy and science. But not Krishna even, maybe God in general. And specifically, if you study the writings of some of these scientists, like one of these scientists who was discovering DNA, Watson, it was Watson and Crick. So Watson, if you read his biography, you'll say, yes, we were trying to get rid of God by our work. That's what we were trying to do. He said we were trying to rewrite the Bible and get rid of God, because people used to think that God was necessary to put the chemicals together, and now we've shown how you don't need God. So sometimes that mentality is there. Very specifically, you can see it. Just like the asuras that we see in Bhagavatam and other ancient writings, the modern asuras, they're also trying to kill God, but not directly with weapons, but with their philosophy. Then, also, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna actually explains to Uddhava, I give them the intelligence to come up with these theories. I give them the intelligence to come up with these ideas. Because if we want to forget Krishna and oppose Krishna, Krishna will give us the intelligence to do that. So he gives them, as super soul, he gives them. Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hridisani vishto matas mritir jnanam apohanam cha. I am the super soul situated in everyone's heart, and from me comes memory, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So if somebody wants to forget Krishna, then Krishna will allow them to do that. Of course, Krishna wants everyone to remember him. So he's always trying to give them opportunities to do that.
Jitakama Prabhu ki.
We have experienced one drop from the ocean of Jitakama Prabhu's transcendental wisdom.
Srila Prabhupada, in regard to what he just spoke, explains how the great defect, which is the real root source of all of these atheistic philosophies and scientific theories, is the desire to be God, the desire to be the enjoyer. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani saravasha ahankara vimutatma karataham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul thinks himself the doer of activities, which are in actuality carried out by nature. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunani lukontaya jagad viparibharatite. Krishna says, I am the controller of nature. It is working under my direction. We are all part and parcel of Krishna. Constitutionally, the soul is infinitesimal, and God is infinite. Our nature is to serve God and to be enjoyed by God. But somehow or other in this material world, we do not want to be the servant, we want to be the master. We don't want to be enjoyed, we want to enjoy. We do not want to worship the Lord, but we want to be the Lord of all we survey. Even the insignificant fish, plants, and insects, in their own state of consciousness, they want to be the Lord of all they survey. They want to be the enjoyer. And this is the root cause of all problems, of all suffering in this world individually and collectively. The great avatars have appeared in this world to teach through philosophy, through logic, through reason, how we are the eternal soul, we are not this body, and therefore we are not meant to enjoy this body. We are meant to serve God with this body, with all of our energies. And throughout history, many great scriptures have been revealed to man, and therefore the general innocent population, they want to understand the truth. And to the degree people understand that they are the spirit soul, they are part of God, they are not meant to enjoy, they are meant to be enjoyed, to that degree they are self-controlled and they are moral. But there is a class of dark-minded and evil-hearted souls who want to be the Lord of all they survey, and that means they want to exploit humanity. And in order to exploit someone, first you have to put them in ignorance. You cannot exploit a self-realized soul. Because how do you exploit someone? By somehow or other tempting their mind and senses to be the enjoyer. And then you have what they need to enjoy. Just look in this city of Bombay, one of so many thousands of cities in the world. Everywhere you go, you are simply being bombarded with the propaganda that you are your body, you are the enjoyer, and come and enjoy. And we have what you need. Let me exploit you. It is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. The fashions of how people dress in materialistic society is simply to induce sexual temptations. And the food that people are propagating is simply to induce that you are the enjoyer of your tongue. What to speak of the newspapers, the magazines, the televisions, practically every aspect of society is very, very systematic propaganda to teach you, you are your body, you are the enjoyer, and let us exploit you so that you can enjoy. Now how, when people turn to religion, to saintly persons, they cannot be exploited in this way. They are self-satisfied.
They are self-controlled. They are God-conscious. So therefore, on a very high platform of material civilization, there are very high demoniac beings who are trying to spread propaganda, and the scientists are just puppets being duped and utilized to convince people, you are your body. There is no God. There is no real prince reason for morality. If morality helps our sense gratification, we accept it. If it interferes with our sense gratification, we reject it. It's something made by man. It has no eternal value. And therefore, these theories that man is coming from apes, that the whole universe was created by a bang in the sky or wherever, they are all very systematically being ordained by higher powers to somehow or other convince everyone in this world that you are the Lord of all your survey. And to the degree you think you're the Lord, someone will lord it over you. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmiti rjanam apohanam cha. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada attacked these ideas because he understood that they're not just innocent mistakes people are making. They are very, very evil motivated propaganda to destroy religion and destroy faith in people's hearts and to promote sinful activities so that we can exploit the world of the cheaters and the cheated. So to expose this for what it is very essential in this modern age. It's most essential. Ultimately, everything is coming from Krishna. And knowledge means to recognize that and to be grateful and to reciprocate. Everything is coming from God. Knowledge means to reciprocate and offer it in the service to God. That is love. That is the only real love. Any other form of love in this world is only another type of exploitation and illusion. Srila Prabhupada in this regard told a nice story. Punar Mushtika Bhava. Again become a mouse. You have all heard the story, but I would like to tell it again. Which basically sums up this whole process of cheating. There was a little mouse, and this mouse was trying to enjoy, but he had a great obstacle in his enjoyment. There was a cat. For the mouse. Not only one mouse, so many mice. There's a story of once so many mice were so much afraid of this cat. They didn't know what to do. So finally they all had a big meeting. And they decided, let's put a bell around the ring, around the neck of the cat. Then whenever it comes, we know it's coming and we can be safe. Then we could live in peace. Otherwise, we do not know when this cat will stalk us. So they were dancing around and cheering how wonderful it was that they came up with this nice plan. And then one old wise mouse said, who is going to put the bell on the cat? And then they became very sad. No one was going to volunteer for that. Anyways, this mouse, he knew he couldn't put the bell on the cat. So he went to a yogi and said to the yogi that, please give me a blessing. And the yogi said, what is the blessing you want? He said, this cat harasses me. Make me a cat. He said, that make you a cat? You will not be satisfied being a cat. You can change your position in this world so many times, But there will always be problems. Adi atmaka, adi daivaka, adi bhautaka. The miseries caused by other living beings, miseries caused by one's own body and mind, miseries caused by natural disturbances. They are upon everyone, in every species of life, from Brahma down to the Indragopa, the little insect. But the mouse could not understand the yogi's preaching because he was too much attached. Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam thayaparati tuchetasam vyavashayatma kabudhi samadhu nabhadiyate. One who is too much attached to material enjoyment and opulences, determination and knowledge, even if you hear it, it does not awaken in your heart. You cannot understand. So the yogi said, all right. And he made him a cat. So then he was thinking, now I am the enjoyer. Now I am cat. So the first thing he did, he started chasing mice. And little mice were running here and there away. And he was really, very much enjoying life until one day the dog came. And when that dog came, ruff, 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 he ran away. And he ran back to the yogi. Said, Yogiji, please, give me a blessing. What blessing you want? Make me a dog. This is evolution. Make me a dog. So you will not be happy as a dog. The same problems will come wherever you go. Abramabhavanarloka punaravartanorjana. Mamupetya tukonteya punarajan manavidyate. From Brahma Loka down to Patala Loka, they're all places of death and misery and fear and all of these terrible things. He said, no. Just make me a dog. So he made him a dog. So what did the dog start doing? Who knows? He started chasing the cats. And he was very happy. He wanted to just... Prabhupada explained the mentality of dogs. They really want to be the lord of all they survey. When you've seen these watchdogs at people's homes, in India, it's not so much. In India, a dog is a dog. But in the Western world, dog is a very high position in society. You don't see dogs living in the streets. Dogs are given the best room in a person's house. They have all kinds of... They have entire industries to just make modern facilities for the comforts and luxuries of dogs. And when I grew up, I can honestly say that most people I saw in their family, they loved the dog the best. People loved their dog better than their brothers or sisters, even their mother or father, because it was the only person they got along with. You agree? This is a... And when the dog dies, it's very, very sad situation. Everybody is weeping and crying for days. Huh? Dog shows. Very popular. And also, actually, just outside of New Vrindavan, there's a very famous place. It's a cemetery for dogs. It's not part of New Vrindavan. We've done some strange things over the years there, but it's a cemetery for pets. And there's tombstones and people come and bring their flowers every day. And you see, for turtles and for cats and for... But dogs have the best. And when you go to someone's house, the dog goes... depending on their size. But Prabhupada knew the heart. He was in contact with Super Soul. We don't know what dogs are thinking. But Prabhupada was in contact with Super Soul. Prabhupada said, they are thinking, this is my land. Why are you coming? You have no right to come. And dogs are meat eaters. When dogs start licking you, you're thinking, oh, he loves me, he loves me. But those who understand the truth tell us that actually they're meat eaters. They're thinking, when you die, I will eat you. So the yogi made him a dog. I'm sorry, I'm not as scientific as Drutakarma. So he became a dog, and he went, and he was trying to increase his domain, and he went into the forest. He was howling. And then, all of a sudden, he came upon a creature he never experienced before. The tiger. Ran away for his life. And he ran to the yogi. It was complete anxiety. The yogi said, what do you want now? He said, make me a tiger. The yogi preached to him, but he insisted on being a tiger. So the yogi said, all right, you be a tiger. He became a tiger. And then he was looking at the yogi. Yes, tigers eat yogis. It is their diet. So the yogi asked him, why you are looking at me like this? He kept looking at him. The yogi said, you want to eat me? The tiger said, I will eat you. So the tiger went to attack the yogi, and the yogi was fearless. As the tiger was coming toward him to eat him, he chanted this mantra, Punar Mushtaka Bhava, again become a mouse. He became a mouse. Beep, 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 beep. And that is the condition of modern world. Whatever we have is coming from God. He is the source of everything. Our brain substance is coming from God. The life breath we have, the air we breathe, it is all the gifts of God. All the materials we utilize to create whatever we are creating, it is all the property of God. Krishna is giving us absolutely everything we have. And he also gives us a particular intelligence according to our desires in life. If you desire to be in ignorance, Krishna will give you a consciousness covered by ignorance. If you desire to create so many theories and philosophies and scientific so-called facts to prove that you are the enjoyer, that you are your body, Krishna will provide all the evidence to convince you that it is true. Yayatamam prabhadyante tamstadaiva bhajamyam. As you approach Krishna, he reveals himself accordingly. Whatever we see, according to our desire, this is how Krishna is making us see it. One person sees money and he thinks, oh, this is for Krishna. Another person sees the same money, he says, this is for me. Everything in the world, Krishna is revealing himself through everything according to our desires in life. a scientist can look through his telescope and he'll see the sky according to how Krishna reveals it to him through his desire. When Srila Prabhupada, everything he would see, the great souls, they just see the manifestations of God's beauty and excellence. So if we want evidence to prove anything, Krishna will give us the awareness by which we will see things in a certain way. Just like Jhutakarma Prabhu was explaining, these facts and theories, they're not factual. But whatever evidence are found, people believe it. These scientists see it and they believe it because that's what they want to believe. Krishna gives them faith according to their desire. But someone who has a desire to serve and love God and understand the truth, they will see the same thing and say, it's ridiculous, it's not evidence at all. As it is said, the whole world is a mirror of our own consciousness. If you are envious, you will see everyone is envious. If you are greedy, you will see everyone is greedy. If you are pure, you will see everyone is potentially pure. But that awareness is coming by the grace of God who is within our heart. In modern society, we are taking the resources of God, the intelligence given by God, the human form of life which is given by God, and we are creating so many theories, so many doctrines, so much technology which is meant to kill God. And what is the ultimate result? Punar Mushtaka Bhava. Again become a mouse. At the time of death, we lose everything. And Krishna says in Gita, I am death personified. So do we want to surrender ultimately to God in his form of death? Or do we want to surrender to God as Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, the all-beautiful, all-loving, all-merciful personality of Godhead, who is inviting us into his enchanting land of Vrindavan Dham to enjoy eternal ecstatic pastimes with him forever. So this is what the purpose of human life is for. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, God himself, has come with the philosophy to defeat all philosophies, with the ultimate science, the science of the soul, the science of God, the science of the absolute truth. And it is all realized through the simple process of the congregational chanting of the holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So let us celebrate the science of self-realization with a wonderful kirtan of the holy name. Thank you very much. One thing before. Some nice special guests have come from foreign lands. I'd like you all to meet them and welcome them. Bhakti Gavin Prabhu is already standing. He's a very dear friend of ours from Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, England. Everyone, please welcome him. And Miles is here. Huh? And also Prakash. Where is Prakash Prabhu? He is also a wonderful, wonderful devotee, very humble servant of all Vaishnavas. And he's coming from England to visit us. Please welcome him. And his good wife Ragini. She is always serving the devotees and the deities with such sincerity. Let us welcome her to
us.
Anyone else? Huh? Miles, Haribo. Devotees want to worship you. Why? Because you're a nice devotee. Everyone, please let us welcome Miles to Radha Gopinath.